The casserole appears at the doorstep, still warm in its tin pan, elbow deep in someone else's afternoon, wrapped in newspaper and a folded dish towel. You can smell slow simmered onions and something sweet and browned on top. A neighbor steps back, pats your shoulder, and says, "We'll see you on Saturday." In one small gesture, the week's dinner is promised, and the grocery list a little shorter. Good evening, and welcome to Financial Time Machine. I'm Megan Thomas. Tonight, we're stepping back into another chapter of everyday American life, exploring the money, culture, habits, and quiet routines that shaped previous generations. From grocery stores and family dinners to old advertisements, retirement dreams, and the way people once thought about debt, security, and success. This podcast is a journey through the forgotten rhythms of American life. Somewhere between nostalgia and history, there's usually a lesson. So settle in, slow down for a little while, and let's take a trip back in time. This is Financial Time Machine.
Before the era of food delivery apps and single-serving microwave meals, another system quietly kept kitchens fed and budgets balanced, the community table. Across small towns and city neighborhoods, people gathered in school basements, lodge halls, union meeting rooms, and civic club tables to share dishes, dollars, and time. These meals were practical. They stretched groceries and labor, but they were also cultural institutions, ways for neighbors to say, "I've got you," without a bill attached. The origins are simple and sensible. In agricultural communities, potlucks followed harvests and barn raisings. Everyone brought what their larders could spare. In industrial towns, factory shift schedules gave rise to shared midday meals and rotating contributions so workers could eat well without buying individually packaged lunches every day. Civic groups, from the PTA to veterans lodges to fraternal organizations, scheduled weekly or monthly suppers as part of their social calendar. These were not merely social events. They were a practical response to scarcity, seasonality, and the desire to make meals communal and economical.
There's a rhythm to how these systems worked. Someone hosted or offered space, a school basement after a bake sale, a union hall after a meeting. A roster developed. One family brought a main, another a salad, another a dessert. If you were short on time or money, you baked a simple casserole. If you had a bumper crop of tomatoes, you made a stew. Recipes became a kind of shared currency. Women's groups, neighborhood committees, and workplace crews kept informal lists and unwritten rotations, so the burden and cost rarely fell on one household for long. That quiet ledger, who brought what, who could cover for whom, was invisible accounting, and it mattered enormously.
Etiquette mattered, too. Covered dish nights had an art to them. Bring something that travels well, place a card with the recipe if it's a hit, and label dishes that needed reheating. There were also social norms about reciprocity. If your neighbor dropped off a pan because your partner was out sick, you'd return the favor the next month or help with a garden chore. Potlucks turned individual frugality into collective abundance. A dozen modest contributions could make a memorable spread without anyone paying a lot.
These patterns had real economic effects. Household grocery bills were smoother because a family's dinner needs were partly met by community rotation. Food waste decreased because excess could be sent to the next supper rather than tossed. Labor was shared. A working mother could rely on a covered dish to feed her children on a busy night, freeing her time and easing the financial pressure of juggling paid work and household duties. Social capital, the trust and goodwill built through these rituals, operated like a low-cost insurance policy during job loss, illness, or bad seasons.
There are stories tucked into this history that feel almost cinematic. A widow in 1958 who never cooked much but was always provided for at the lodge suppers. Teenagers learning social grace by carrying platters to the long table.
neighbors pooling money for a communal Thanksgiving. Those small acts of mutual aid never showed up on balance sheets, but they kept families afloat in ways formal programs did not. They were domestic economies built on trust and daily routines.
Contrast that with our modern food landscape. Subscriptions, takeout apps, single-serve convenience items, and individual schedules. Convenience has great value, but it often comes at more visible cost. Where a covered dish rotation redistributed both food and effort, today's solutions tend to commodify that labor. We exchange neighborly contact for clicks, and the soft insurance of reciprocal favors is replaced by receipts and delivery fees. The result is less visible support in quiet emergencies and fewer daily rituals that knit a neighborhood together.
That's not to say everything from the past should be revived wholesale. Life was harder in many ways, and responsibilities, especially those placed on women to organize and sustain these systems, weren't evenly shared. But if we listen, there are practical lessons in how communities once softened the financial load. Small, low-tech rituals provided resilience. A weekly potluck, a rotating meal calendar for new parents, a mutual pantry where surplus produce was deposited for anyone to take.
If you want one small experiment to try this week, consider organizing a monthly open table on your block or at work. One evening where everyone brings a dish and newcomers are especially welcome. Make the expectation modest. One simple thing to share, a list to avoid duplication, and a short rotation so the effort doesn't fall on the same household. It won't fix structural economic problems, but it can build pockets of care that matter when life gets tight. Dadgum, it might even change how your family thinks about food and community.
And that's where we'll leave our journey tonight. The past may look different through modern eyes, but sometimes, hidden inside old routines and forgotten traditions, we find pieces of ourselves we've been missing. Thank you for spending a little time traveling through history with me.
Until next time, keep one foot in the past. Good night, and thanks for listening to Financial Time Machine. Somewhere between nostalgia and history, there's usually a lesson. Let's find it.